Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Kane Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a special guest in with us today, Mike Atkinson.
Good morning.
A renowned plumeria grower here in San Diego.
Only in my own head.
I have always called Mike, since I first met him, I think, the king of all plumeria.
And see, so. I call him Mr. Plumeria.
Ooh, I like that too.
And I would argue that he's probably forgotten more than we all know with regard to plumeria.
I have no doubt about that.
I've forgotten more just from age. So, yeah, you know how that goes.
What got you interested in growing plumeria?
Well, I had absolutely no interest in gardening in my entire life. My mom was a fantastic gardener, but it did not come through the genes whatsoever. My wife, where she grew up, the house she grew up, we actually were able to take possession of it, mm-hmm. and her folks moved across the street, catty corner to that property. And the previous owner had passed away. He mm-hmm. was a great collector of exotic plants. And he was a botany professor at San Diego State. And so his collection was just unparalleled. And there were two or three plumeria on the property. And Stacy, my wife, found them, of course, immediately and just instantly fell in love. And it was just the classic white yellow mm-hmm. called Celandine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, but the scent is one of the best scents there is in plumeria. And so she started looking into it. And then I don't know how much longer after that, we were going to church on a Sunday morning and she runs across the street, jumps this little fence so she could get on the property and grabbed one of the flowers, put it in her hair. And we went mm-hmm. to church. And after church, a gentleman came up and said, "Oh, nice plumeria." And she goes, "What'd you call it?" she didn't know what it was called. No, we didn't know what any of the things on his property were. Mm. And so he says, "Well, I just happen to be the co-founder of the Plumeria Society in San Diego. And we have a meeting today. Would you like to go with me?" And she goes, "Yeah, but I got to talk my husband into watching 8 kids." And so I reluctantly did it, and no kids died that day. So that was
fortunate.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she came home with this handful of flowers of all these different colors because she only thought it was just the white yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just blown away. The collection started quickly because for some reason, whatever nuclear power we had with our celandines, the flowers were much larger than kind of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And so people wanted to trade cuttings. And so she's getting cuttings and trading plants. And so our collection increased pretty quick there. And so that's kind of how it got started. It was 4 or 5 years after that till I had any interest whatsoever. And it was my wife started quilting. And she didn't have as much time for the plumerias. And so I thought, well, I'll go water them or whatever. And so I'm watering them and I'm wondering, what's up with this one? What's up with that one? And then she invited me to a Plumeria Society meeting, which had kind of been her safe space, mm-hmm. just her getaway from the kids and me. And so I thought, well, she's going to invite me. I'm going to go. And I went, oh, this is cool. Started hearing from experts. I mean, these were, this is the mid-90s, probably. This is mm-hmm. the early pioneers of plumerias in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And we started going up to the Orange County one that Bud Collot led, who was the grandfather of plumerias mm-hmm. in Southern California. And I'm just the kind of person that if I kind of get into something, I get into something, right?
You go big or go home.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I'm working on them and I'm watering them and I'm like, okay, why is it doing this? Why is it doing that? And so I'm asking questions and I find the very first Plumeria group on the internet called Plumeria Pals on Yahoo Groups long before nobody knew anything was social back then.
And did you get there through AOL?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I got that disc in the mail.
Yeah.
And these were the pioneers of Plumerias from around the world, literally, and especially the United States. And man, I'm just soaking it up like a sponge. Come to find out, one of the two people that started the group, one is Scott Lauder, very dear friend, who lives in Kansas and, yes, grows Plumeria, and not just Plumeria, many, many Plumeria over decades and successfully. And he's been a mentor for me in how to grow them in cold areas since we are.
And so he doesn't grow them in a greenhouse then?
Well, no, he stores them in a greenhouse.
Okay.
Yeah, he controlled greenhouse over the winter. Originally was his garage. The man is so crazy. He created the lights so that they would move through the day to mimic the sun.
Oh my word.
That's hardcore. No, yeah. He's way overboard and I love him for that. So that was one. The other guy was Ken Ames, who was another founder of the Plumeria Society, wonderful human being. And so I got to meet him and went at meetings and such. And so that was kind of the early, you know, early time for us.
But you know, when I read your bio on the on your website, which we'll announce here, the AtkinsonPlumeria.com, mm-hmm. Your website, you said that you actually never really shared, as you alluded to, Stacy's excitement about Plumeria. You just, you know, that's her stuff.
Yeah.
But then something about a Hawaii trip where you.
Yeah, yeah. So I got her a trip as a gift for our 20th anniversary, which was 24 years ago. And we went and she brought the classic Plumeria book, Growing Plumeria in Hawaii by Jim Little, who's the number one hybridizer of Plumerias in Plumeria history. And she fell asleep and I forgot to bring anything to read. And so I read it and I was fairly interested, but this is before I've started getting in it. And I thought, well, that was kind of interesting. And then she'd point out Plumerias while we're there. And then, of course, I think we went back about 8 years after I'd start and get involved in it. And so our first trip from the airport was stopping at Home Depot to get all the goods to be able to take cuttings mm-hmm. while we're there. And so we got trash bags and saws and all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, we'd go
this
into
was a Home Depot in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people, when they go to Hawaii, they don't buy garden tools.
No, not really. No.
Yeah.
It's so actually sounded like an episode of The Sopranos. we've got the gloves, the saws, the plastic bags, and the tarps.
Duct tape?
And we're going to meet them out in the desert.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about that part of the trip, but yeah, so we got all that. Then we went to Costco, which is what most tourists do.
Exactly.
To get their food. And so we would hit a different area and she'd go off and go shopping and hit the quilt shops and I'd go off hunting for Plumerias and just met the most amazing people. I had much more fun in the neighborhoods, but there's plenty in the condo complexes, in the resorts.
They're all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I learned to hit them early in the morning as the groundskeepers are out there. And of course I would say, hey, I love this Plumeria. Is there any way I can take a cutting? He goes, please, please take a cutting because wow. I have to rake up these flowers from those branches every single morning. So that was my reception, you know, in the organized areas. The home areas, you know, I'm like, hey, can I buy one? Great story. We get into Lahaina and we pull down this alley because it's just down from the quilt shop and she pops out. So I keep driving and this is right on the other side of Front Street, which used to be there. Mm-hmm. So sad. And it's all, you know, commercial, right? But there's this tiny, and I mean tiny little house with this tiny little backyard. And there's this short, very old Japanese man in only Levi shorts, and he's gardening. And he had one of the most spectacular Hilo Beauty. Hilo Beauty is the deep, dark, almost black maroon plumeria. And it was huge. And so I just stopped and I said, sir, I... absolutely adore your plan. It's spectacular. Could I buy a cutting off from you? And he just kind of gives me a grunt. He walks over to it and he takes this big branch and goes, here. Oh, and it was literally like 4.5 feet long. And I'm like, oh, okay. What do I owe you? Oh, no, just take it. I mean, you know, I got so much aloha there. It was my first introduction to that. It was fantastic. And so anyway, he told me it was his mother-in-law used to own that house, and she planted it the day that he got married to his wife, to her daughter. So it had this great history. So we came home with 90 cuttings.
Oh my word, that trip.
So it was pretty sweet.
Well, before we came on the air, you and I were talking about it, and the professor of botany at San Diego State was Dr. Avery.
Yeah.
And I actually took an introduction to botany class with him. And it would have been 1981, 1982. Somewhere around there.
So. Yeah. And my in-laws bought it around 88, 89 after he passed away. Yeah. And so we heard many things. I looked up all kinds of stuff about him, found these old pictures, black and white pictures of him at State.
Yeah. It's funny. That's the only formal class I have ever taken in a plant-related field.
Oh, how funny.
That is bizarre. Well, you're like an astrology major.
Astronomy.
That's right, not astrology. Yeah,
not astrology.
But what's the difference, really?
It's a big difference.
I'm a Taurus.
Read my palm?
Yeah. Now, what part of town is this in?
We are on the the east lower slope of Mount Helix.
Oh, okay.
Right above Avocado Boulevard as it goes down into El Cajon.
Okay.
And our property starts at a high point where the street is, mm-hmm. and it slopes down for 2 acres.
Oh, wow.
And at the bottom is a culvert. Okay. And so that's why I had to deal with cold weather, because obviously it gets much colder as it goes down.
Mm-hmm. As we discussed on the radio last week.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Exactly. And there again, that was my buddy Scott teaching me all those things about cold weather growing. And because I wanted to put them in the ground. And so, you know, I, through his mentorship and a lot of mistakes and dead plants, finally kind of figured out some of the ways to do that so that they would survive, mostly.
Very interesting. We're talking to Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. And Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria, is here in San Diego. We were talking before the break about how you got started in it. I remember, and we were talking, you and I were talking briefly during the break. I remember in the early 1980s, about that time that I took the class from Dr. Avery, the only plumerias we could get were the white and yellow, and every once in a while we would get a Singapore, I'm not quite sure what the draw is on Singapore.
Well, it's an evergreen.
That's true.
It's the mother of all evergreens. Yeah. And the scent is spectacular.
Yeah,
I consider better than a celandine.
Yeah, it has that unusual foliage to it. With the rounded kind of leather. Yeah, leathery, very glossy, rounded tip on it.
While it is evergreen, does it remain evergreen if it's colder?
That's a really good question, because everybody thinks, oh, good, I'll have beautiful green leaves all year. Now, they do this at the resorts in Hawaii because they don't want deer antlers on their property in the winter. And so most of them buy Singapore trees. A lot from Jim Little. Mm. And they're very popular because of that. However, I would say probably everything from San Diego State West, it's probably going to stay green and look good. But the colder you get, the more east you get, they definitely yellow. And I have a evergreen row as you drive in our driveway on the left. And there's, you know, Singapore and about three of its babies, they're ugly and yellow leaves, you know, because, you know, they stay on which is kind of unfortunate, but they're, you know, they get burnt by the cold, literally. So, yeah, so people need to understand that depending on where you are, it depends on whether, you know, it's going to look nice for you.
I think it was about that time we hired a customer service rep at our San Diego store. He was a Hawaiian guy. His name was Brant Dolfo, and he's the one that really got us into plumerias. And he taught the very first plumeria class that we ever had at our San Diego store. And we probably had 80 or 90 people show up for it. It was that popular. And it was after that that we started seeing more popularity in plumerias and things, and the plants just became more readily available. And then we used to, I don't even remember where we would get the cuttings from, but we would get cuttings every year.
Well, you get plants from Ampol.
Yeah, yes. We did. Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. We got a lot from him.
He's amazing.
And he was the first person that I ever knew that grafted them.
Yeah. No, he was the first person ever to graft them.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
On Earth. As far as we know.
As far as you know. Yeah. We used to get some grafted ones from him. And I remember we used to make our own plumeria mix to plant them in. Oh. And it was pumice and redwood compost.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Wow.
And we used to dump it all on the asphalt in the back of the nursery and shovel it and mix it all together and then bag it ourselves. We don't do that anymore.
No,
we found a much better way of doing it.
And you were pioneering the use of pumice because most people have always used perlite. I started using it about 10 years ago and more are starting to use it. But you know, the whole idea is you put these amendments in so it helps the drainage, but perlite always bubbles up to the top.
Yeah, not
it's
a
like,
fan.
Well, it's not working then. It's not doing its job.
It's not doing what it's supposed
to do. It's gone from down in the soil.
Yeah. But yeah, we used to make a lot of that stuff.
Did
that for a long time.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, you just touched a little bit on soil. And so we could talk on how to plant plumerias and all that. But the reason I'm so happy you're here, and you do teach classes for us once a year at the store, and we'll be scheduling that for June, I hope, this year as well. But we're fortunate to have you because now that you're super, super, super famous, you know, you've been with Nan Sturman for Growing Passion, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
that show, is the only Emmy they ever won was that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was just a small part of it.
Right.
But that show,
you're super famous.
Oh, it was so
and,
well
and
done.
Here you are. With three infamous people, which is more than famous. But back in February, early February, Martha Stewart had an article on how to grow plumeria flowers indoors and outside, according to gardening experts.
Yes.
And you were one of the three gardening experts.
Well, Maddie called me, and I'm just joking. I don't know Martha. No, it was nice. I got referred to the freelance writer that was writing it. And so she sent me some questions and filled it out and was honored to be listed with the other gentlemen who are good friends. And it was kind of interesting. Got some interesting, you know, feedback from folks on that. And
we'll have to post that on our Facebook page so the rest of the folks can read that. But to that, I mean, planting plumerias here.
Yeah.
You know, what's the secret?
Well, the secret is understanding where they come from. And no, it's not Hawaii. And it is from the Caribbean.
I didn't know that.
Okay,
Most people don't. As a data point, look at his shirt.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So what are you wearing?
Plumerias and a Tommy Bahama shirt.
Bahama.
Monstera. So most academicians believe it originated on the Yucatan Peninsula. So it's a Mexican plant.
Okay.
And there's, you know, Mayan drawings of them using them in their ceremonies and such. And then it spread out from there. In the mid 1800s, that's when European horticulturalists and such were taking cuttings from that area and then taking them over to the islands in the Pacific. And they found, you know, a wonderful environment because it's the same thing. They were volcanic islands, which is what they needed. So why did they like that so much? Because as soon as it rains, all that water drains away.
Yeah.
They don't like to sit in mud.
No, they do not.
Yeah. There's an old adage that says they don't like wet feet, which is not true. I've rooted many of cutting in water. They don't like muddy feet. And so if you have one of those water catchers at the bottom of your pot, get rid of it. They like good, well-draining soil. And, you know, the easiest thing for most consumers, you just go buy some cactus soil. And I do recommend that you add, you know, kind of one of those half-size bags of pumice, perlite if they have to that to increase the drainage. And that's really your best bet to really achieve that amount of drainage that the plumeria is really going to need.
And that's for in the ground?
No. Oh, that's in a pot. That's all container.
What if I wanted to put that in a ground?
Well, as you know, we have very different soils.
That's right.
In San Diego. I'm fortunate to have decomposed granite. And I've had plenty of people go, oh, I can't use decomposed granite. It's so hard. Well, it's hard, but you have to condition it. And I mean, in the old days, before I knew about conditioning, I would dig about 3 inches as far as I could. I'd fill it with water. I'd come back the next day, maybe get another 4 inches. And I'd keep doing that for a few days until I could finally get a hole that would do it. But they still love it. And having all that granite in there, the heat that it offers. But, you know, clay, that's a whole different story. I've never done it before, but I know a ton of people that have. And they've all the way from thrown it in the ground with no amendments, all the way to digging a hole 3 sizes larger and putting gypsum down and using cactus soil and all that. And I've heard, you know, success on both sides of that. So other than that, it's, you know, I've never heard somebody in an area ever that say, you just cannot grow in this area. So, I mean, there's ways to do it.
Well, I know, and where my house is in Scripps Ranch, the soil's terrible. It doesn't drain hardly at all.
Yeah.
It's really bad. I've never even attempted to grow a plumeria in the ground where I live.
Yeah.
But not too far from where my house is, in another area of Scripps Ranch, there's one house in particular that has about 4 or 5 of them growing in their front yard.
Yeah.
And they're large, large plants doing very well. Now, what their soil is like compared to where I am, I don't know. Or maybe they're on a fill lot so that the soil is actually somewhat better than the native soil, but you know it can be done. I would just be careful with it.
What I do for people in your situation, I just say try it. Mm-hmm. Get a Celadine, you know, a cheap plant, throw it in the ground and see what happens. You know, you just never know.
I have one at my house in PQ. I haven't looked at it in a while, but I put it at the top of a hill, so it's warmer. Yeah,
that's.
And it's clay, lots of clay. You could take, when you dig a hole, you can pull it out and mold a little figurine and put it in the fire and make something. But what I did is I used E.B. Stone makes a citrus and palm mix, which is also made for tropical plants. Worked really well. But I mixed that in, but I did a keyhole in the front. Mm-hmm. I dug down in the front and opened it up just so that the water could drain out. And it
plumerias really love slopes.
And it worked really well.
And that's why they love slopes, because the water just drains away. They don't want to sit in that water.
Our neighbors here in Poway have beautiful specimens outside their home. Spectacular.
Granite is your friend when it comes to plants, by the way.
Yeah, it really is.
It drains away, stays warm, which a lot of the plants like. In fact, historically speaking, not far from where Mike is, at the base of that hill in Elkhorn, because Ken's a historian also, there's a spring that was there called El Granito at Chase and Avocado, essentially a block in.
There's a street name.
Yes, there is. Yeah. And it was a very famous, so, you know, the water perks through all that granite and gets to the bottom, and there was a spring down there. So,
We have a big loquat tree and a big pomegranate tree we haven't watered in 10 years. So, there's something there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember there used to be a specialty grower up in, I think they were in Fallbrook. Can't remember the name of it now. But we used to sell seedling plumeria. I don't know where they were getting their seed from, but they was just the rubra, and they were in 2 1/4 inch rose pots. They were about this tall. We used to sell those things like crazy.
Oh, I bet.
And people would grow, and apparently they grow from seed fairly easily.
It's not hard. Hard to do at all. But what you know, like we have a ton of seeds from last year we didn't use. We germinate quite a few, but just way more than we could do. So we'll have those this year at one of our sales. But seedlings do grow fairly well. It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine who has probably the largest plumeria nursery in the contiguous United States, and he's in South Florida. I mean, like almost on the way to the Keys. Mm. And the last time I went last May, I was just like, it's just so cool to see them in their native habitat. You know, this is exactly where they started, was in this habitat. And we were talking about doing seeds actually this morning, and he goes, you really can't grow them outside? I'm like, no, you can't, because, you know, we're a coastal desert. We have no humidity, at least not enough to protect them like you do. Mm-hmm. They're all outside and it's sunny, but all that humidity moderates that the UV rays, and they just thrive. Mm. And, you know, I'm very jealous.
It is pretty amazing how they grow back.
But the other thing you need to also tell people that are interested in seedlings is that the average time for them to bloom is about 8 to 10 years.
Oh, okay. So that's very good to
very
know.
Very slow to bloom the first time, and then sometimes very slow to bloom the second time. Oh. So most of those will never go to market for the people that grow it, commercially. It takes a while. Yeah.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Mike Atkinson. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumerias. During the break, we were talking about growing plumerias, and one of the things that you go over in your classes, there's four key points to growing plumerias.
Well, soil was one. Mm-hmm. We just talked about that. Sun is easy, as much sun as they can get.
Yeah.
They just love the heat. They are nothing like other tropicals that have to be in shade because our UV rays are too strong for them. The more heat those roots can get, the better off they're going to be, which is why you're going to see most growers have their containers, the plants in containers, they are black plastic. So they're absorbing as much heat as they can for the roots. That's super important. Fertilizer, plumerias are hungry, but they're pretty indiscriminate, kind of like me, in eating. And so they can, I mean, it's like we're talking to gardeners. You have fertilizer, use it. Plumerias are hungry.
So you're saying that plants can't read? They don't care what's on the bag?
No, don't care. We do know that the high phosphorus ones, they don't do well with them over time. And it's funny because a lot of the ones are marketed as four tropical plants, have a picture of plumerias,
exactly.
Right? Well, the only place that's useful is on the Hawaiian Islands because they have very low phosphorus in their soils because of the lava.
Well, that's interesting.
That's helpful hint right there.
Yeah, it's very helpful. Yeah, because that was always our standard was a extremely high phosphorus.
Right.
Phosphorus.
No.
So what would you recommend for that middle number?
Just balanced.
Balanced.
You balance. Yeah, okay. Get those three numbers as close to each other. The one we use is 11, 12, 14.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I suggest, I just blanked on it. The time release that you have.
Osmocote
Plus. Yeah. Thank you. Uh-huh. And that's, I think, 9, 11, something. So it's very close. And I'm into slow release so that you don't have as much work to do.
Uh-huh.
But I do a regimen of organic and synthetic. And so I'm using organic all the time. Worm castings, mostly manures. And seaweed extract, fish emulsion, that type of stuff. They really respond to that. You know, it's feeding the soil and making the soil even more healthy. And, you know, our container plants, they lose all those, you know, they sell these great, you know, potted soils and talk about all the great stuff in it. And I've asked those manufacturers before, well, how long does that stay in there? And they're like, maybe about 3 months after. Mm-hmm. Every time you water, it's just flushing them out. Mm-hmm. So you got to feed them, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
and what do you feel about trace minerals? I know a lot of plants from volcanic areas because it is very low phosphorus, but that the trace minerals are high. So one of the things I've done with other tropical plants is I use some azomite to give it a little mineralization. Yeah. Do you find that's an issue?
I've not used that before. Oh. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Well,
yeah. The other one is watering, and I think it's the most important part to understand because, like we said, plumerias, really they're they're really water wise plants. One, because they're dormant for almost half the year, right? So the other reason is because they just don't like a lot of water. It's actually similar to houseplants. You let them dry out before you water them. Now, everybody loves, including me, an easy anecdote of what to do. Water them once a week. The problem is that that number one, our weather dictates how fast they dry, right? And I'm talking primarily about containers. It's pretty different with ones in the ground. But, you know, and your 1 gallon pot is going to dry out much faster than your 5 gallon pot. So there's no easy answer with that. It's like, well, it's when they're dry. And when I mean dry is, you know, on a typical moisture meter, it's moist and wet and then dry, right? And, or I'm sorry, wet, moist, dry. At the bottom of moist, right as it goes into dry, that's when I do it. And so it's not that easy because you're going to have to be watering based on when the ones, your 1 gallons are dry, and then on when your 5 gallons are dry, and then based on your 20 gallons if you have them. So so watering is if you get that right, you will see blooms and plants that thrive like you've never seen before. Seriously.
You know, that's one of the things that's nice about plumerias, because they're somewhat succulent. They can be pretty forgiving. I had one on my pool deck for a long time. I still don't know exactly what happened to it, but it did end up rotting at one point and was gone. But it was out there for years.
Yeah.
And I would water it when I would think about it, but they have so much more, they hold so much moisture in them that they're, there's some wiggle room.
The interesting thing about that too, is I've had many friends from other states, Florida, Texas, Scott from Kansas, and they're like, your branches are so much thicker than ours because we don't have the humidity. So they have to retain more water in them. So, I mean, like a Jeannie Marini, they're like baseball bat branches, right? In Texas, they're like, you know, they're not baseball bats. It's very small. And so, yeah, it's a weird thing, but it's how they adapt to our Mediterranean climate.
Yeah, they really are relatively easy to grow.
They're resilient and they're very easy to grow. They love neglect, and that's why I do it.
that might be why mine did so well for as long.
My wife
as
calls me the king of neglect.
You know, not to digress, but when you were talking about fertilization, what is your regimen as far as feeding? When would you start feeding? Here we are in spring. You know,
right. So feeding and watering typically happens when they have a few fully opened leaves. Okay. Now, because of this crazy weird winter we've had, I'm starting to see leaves coming out on a few of my in-ground plants. And those are just the mature ones, not the potted plants. But once we see full open leaves and our low temperatures are consistently above 50, that tells you we're in the season now. Okay. And so at that point, you can start feeding them and watering them. So I had a message this morning from a guy, and he's like, man, it was so hot and been so warm the last couple of weeks, and they look like they're waking up. Should I start watering them? Well, what are we getting the next week? It's going to be cool and rainy. And so, you know, that's the thing. It happened a few years ago. We had the hottest February in history, and all these people started watering their plants, their plumerias. And the last week had the coldest frost we'd have in years. And most of them died. All those died. Because the number one thing that kills them is rot, which is caused by wet soil and cold temperatures.
Interesting. Yeah, there's really not a lot of pests that get on them.
Well, you get any pest you can get with any plant.
Yeah.
They don't have them like a lot of, like hibiscus, you know, white flies just love those things.
Well, when it first hit Southern California, I remember the giant white fly would get on plumerias. It was relatively, you could wash it off with a strong stream of water. But I remember plumerias were one of the plants that it really affected along with hibiscus.
I mean, it kind of depends on what's going on in your area and how they get, and then when they travel to your area. And so we've had spider mites. We had a really bad one a few years ago, spider mites. We had the leafhopper which had obliterated a lot of collections up in Orange County.
Really?
Geez, probably 6-7 years ago, I would guess. And we saw some of it here, nothing like the extent they had it up there, but I got one year that was pretty bad. And, those things are nasty. And there's only one bug in the world that'll kill your plumerian. It's the Plumeria borer beetle. Otherwise all the other ones are just going to make it really unhappy and look horrible, you know, like all other plants.
So if you have OCD and have to have a very good looking plant, what's your go-to insecticide, pesticide for?
Well, I do the, increase the severity, starting with the, spraying it off with water and then, excuse me. Insecticidal soap if you have to. I've used Captain Jack's, organic insecticides, and sometimes that works. And it's like if each one of those don't work, then you got to go for it and carpet bomb.
Break out the big guns.
Yeah. And I hate to do that because I love all the other. I mean, this last year we had a crazy amount of dragonflies. And I mean, I could sit in my work area in the morning and just watch like a dozen of them flying above one of my groves. And have breakfast, go for it, So, so that's pretty cool. So you just hate what it does to the other, the good bugs, obviously. So that's why it's best to start at low level.
Concur. Yep.
Yeah. I would agree with that as well. Do you do a lot of hybridizing?
I don't. I mean, I think it was two winters ago, we had 200 seed pods in the farm. We have 300 plants in the ground, trees, and but we had 200 pods. Now, those were probably from maybe 75 trees. Otherwise, they, there's just so many that just don't pod. And I grow those, but primarily I grow them for grafting. They're the best root host.
That's interesting.
Excellent rootstock because they have the strongest root system. When you root a cutting, it's just got these little roots around the bottom. But man, you should see a Plumeria seedling root system. It's insane. And they're so strong. And what I've used them for in the past is I may get a cutting of a variety from maybe from Thailand or something. And Thai varieties have a problem adapting here. And so I'll put them on a seedling and they do much, much better. So I do that. Now I will look for visual clues that it might have some color to it, like color of the bark, edge of the leaf, leaf color, the tip color, and I'll pull those out and I'll grow them. So I have a place called Seedling Alley on my property. There's over 100 seedlings that I grow there.
Wow.
And everyone that turns out nice, I name them for a granddaughter.
Well, talk about the flowers. It is interesting because it's one of the few flowers that you really can't see the reproductive part of the flower.
Right.
It's all way down in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Bill Maraney in the 50s was the first person to manually hybridize and get in there. And he took it from Daisy Wilcox and Scott Pratt, another very dark maroon. And came up with the Maraney collection, some of the most beautiful, like that Jeannie Maraney I mentioned earlier. And it's just, they're stunning. And, but people, again, need to understand, DNA wins. And the stronger DNA is your lighter colors, your white, yellow, that type of thing. So most of the seedlings end up that tricolor, maybe even if you're lucky. So it's more of the anomalies that are the, pinks and rainbows and reds and such. And of course, it all depends on parentage. The mother tree is important. If you know the father tree, then that's great, but that's a key.
Very interesting. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest, Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back. with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria. We've been talking about all kinds of stuff having to do with plumerias. Pretty neat plants, easy to grow.
Low maintenance.
One of the most popular ways of growing them is by cuttings.
Right.
What's your advice on growing them from cuttings?
Well, if you're taking cuttings, most people are going to just pull out their pruning shears, pruning clippers, and it's not a good idea. Like you said earlier, they're very succulent-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flesh of a plumeria is very soft. And as you know, pruning shear has a sharp edge and it has a blunt edge. And that mm-hmm. blunt edge just comes in there and tears apart that flesh. Really, what I use is just a Milwaukee thin blade, small teeth, just a saw, handsaw, little guy. And we found some other ones that are bigger that helps with the bigger branches and stuff, but it's that thin saw and with tiny, tiny teeth. And that you just want it to have a really nice cut.
Mm-hmm.
We cut them with a flat cut. Typically, we make two cuts. We cut off the mother tree at an angle so that the water doesn't pull up on the part of the branch that's left.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah. So, because then it'll rot.
Mm-hmm.
But then we make another cut on the cutting itself to make it a flat, because that means you're going to get roots all the way around the edge, as opposed to if it was at an angle, you'd get them just at the tip. But rooting is a very interesting process. It's the hardest thing to do in plumerias, and because there's so many factors. I mean, you know, what was up with the tree that it came from? You know, mm-hmm. maybe the tree was good, but that particular branch it was on was weak for some reason. So you just never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good idea to callus that.
I was going to say that's one of the things that we usually recommend if people are getting fresh cuttings, to let it callus over for a few days.
What you've done is you've created an open wound, mm-hmm. right? And it's just wide open and you put it right in soil, and soil has all the good and bad stuff in it. And that bad stuff just gets up there and rots. So a lot of people just take a piece of Saran wrap and put it around the bottom and tape it on or rubber band it on, and you keep that sap in there. And all that humidity is what causes the callus. So it's fairly easy. And usually a week to 2 weeks, it's fully calloused.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can pop it in some soil and stake it to support it. And then keep it out of the sun, direct sun. Some people water it the first time. I don't even do that because most soil has moisture in it already. And then just put it away and forget it for probably 2 to 3 months until you start seeing full open leaves. And that tells you now there are roots that you can start doing something with it, watering it and slowly work it out into full sun.
Now, when you teach, you use sulfur once in a while, mm-hmm. right? You talk about using that.
Yes.
So where would you be using that?
Well, in that process that I talked about with cutting, as soon as I cut it and make that second flat cut on it, we dip it. I mean, we crush it down into that and get as much caked onto it as possible. It's an antifungal. Mm-hmm. So it's going to help protect the bottom of that. Then we put that Saran wrap on it and wait that week or two. Mm. And it just makes that your extra protection for that open wound.
I know that when you teach classes here at the Poway store, and I'm sure at the San Diego store, you always send us a list of things that you like to talk about.
Right.
So we always bring those products in, much like you do, John.
Mm. Yeah.
And I know when Mike is done, everything that he speaks to is sold out.
Mm.
And we have to go into the back room and bring more out. Especially the soil sulfur. That's why I was thinking about it.
And this year, I will be doing a much bigger emphasis on worm castings. I've done some tests the last few years on them. I just can't believe the results. It's fantastic. I consider rehab. So I take plants that are not doing well, or plants that did do well and now aren't, or they were blooming and they've stopped for a couple of years. And man, I just load that up with worm castings, or worm tea, either way you're watering it in, kind of mm-hmm. the same thing. And, I've seen great results with that.
So, yeah, it is. Worm castings is an underutilized mm-hmm. asset, in a lot of gardens.
Yeah. This is true for all plants.
Absolutely.
And we're anecdotally, worm castings also, I know on hibiscus, and I'm sure it's the same with plumerias too. It will help prevent the white fly.
Yeah, I have a hibiscus. I put it on. Within 2 hours, they were all gone.
I have one that I did it, and years have gone by without any white fly infestations on a plant that constantly had it.
Yeah.
Well, what a difference.
I did some research on it because I'd been testing it on plants, and then I'd started doing research on research. Mm-hmm. And I mean, every major horticulture department in big universities have tested it. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's across the board. It's improvements all the way from 60 to 90% in terms of root development, blooming, whatever. And it's amazing. It just feeds that soil, and the soil just eats it up, and the roots love it.
You know, it's interesting that you say when you're callusing to put the Saran wrap over it, because we had always just recommended just cut it off and leave it. Just let it sit and callus over for a week or two.
Well, that works in Hawaii.
Okay.
I mean, I know people that do it and they just hang it on a fence, you know, and let it callus in midair because they have the humidity. Mm-hmm. We don't. And so typically what happens is, you know, when you say, well, just leave it out, our climate just dries it up at the end.
See, for me, it would have been counterintuitive because putting the plastic on would hold moisture and help it rot as opposed to drying and callusing over like you might do with a potato when you slice it in order to.
See, plumerias like wet feet. And in that case, that's wet.
Interesting.
Right. So, so definitely that callusing process is critical. Because the lack of humidity we have, it's just going to dry it out. So that pith recesses, it breaks away from the wood ring. Mm-hmm. And it just, if you put it in the soil, then all that bad stuff gets up in there. And when we became a commercial operation, when I got laid off in 2020, mm-hmm. it was like, we took all our best practices and made it gospel, right? Because now we're a business and we can't afford risk. Mm-hmm. We can't afford loss. And so we have one way that we root, and pretty much what I've said, and we have extensive instructions on our website on it. And so that's one of the things that we do, the fertilizing and the watering, all that stuff is also super important.
For the listeners, your website is?
AtkinsonPlumeria.com. Yeah, AtkinsOn.
A lot of interesting information there. You have a list of the classes that you teach, mm-hmm. And you teach various garden clubs and things that you teach for us. So we'll schedule, and George is going to schedule one coming up here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I'm doing 2 garden clubs this next month, and then I'm doing 7 classes at our property. And this is my spring class I do. I think this year I called it Help Your Plumeria Thrive in 25. and it's just, okay, what do we do now? They're starting to wake up. How do we best, help them and ensure a good growing season?
Now, if people want to come visit the farm, is the farm open?
Yeah, by appointment only. Just contact us through our website. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. That you can contact us through that as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
I did notice one of the classes that you teach a class on flower and lace.
Ah, that's where I was going.
Yeah,
I was going to say that.
Yep. My wife, it was that trip to Lahaina. Mm-hmm. And we're walking down the street in Lahaina, and I'm yapping as usual, yap. And all of a sudden, I look over, and my wife's not there. And I look back, and 2 blocks back, so I was talking to nobody. I can imagine what people were thinking. She has sat on a blanket with an old Hawaiian woman who was making lei and selling it to tourists. And she sat there for over 2 hours and just soaked in everything this woman gave her, which was an amazing amount. Just again, aloha, amazing people. Mm-hmm. And she came home and she got all the stuff to do it and started making them. And then she'd do these tiny little classes with 3 or 4 friends that wanted to learn. And so now it's, her classes outperform my classes by double at least. Mm. They're the most popular all throughout the summer. Because of course the summer is when we have our most blooms, and so the classes are so much fun. I love to just hang out because it's all these BFFs. We had a Filipino family, 4 generations that came with grandma, great great grandma, whatever, on a walker and in her 90s and making lei all the way down to the young kids. And so it's really a special time. It's a great community experience. that's very fun. So we usually start those in July when we have enough flowers on the property.
Well, your classes are popular outside of your own property. You know, when you do classes, your wife accompanies you and they're actually, as you said, there's that aloha. It's a lot of fun.
And
you put Hawaiian music on before you start, which everyone likes to get into the groove.
It's really nice. Yeah. And so usually, you know, if we do a class and it's in plumeria season, she'll pick a hundred or so and bring them, and she puts toothpicks at the end of them. And so ladies can just slip it above their ear and, you know, and usually we'll do a couple lays that we'll give away and that type of thing. So lays are amazing. And it's an amazing part of the Hawaiian and Polynesia culture. And it's one that we've fallen in love with and definitely adapted. The other thing we love too, and this was just one of the cool surprises for us, was just getting to know people in the Hawaiian and Polynesian dance community. And them in the early days going, can we use plumerias in our costumes? I'm like, I don't know, I guess. Now they're fairly delicate flowers. So, I mean, most people, if they have a competition, you know, on a Saturday, they're getting them late Friday from us and then they do fine. And, so we have met just the most amazing people, full of aloha, and, become dear friends. And I think we sold, probably close to 10,000 blooms last year.
Wow. That's a lot.
For costumes.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. George, we have classes?
We do have classes today, March 15th in San Diego at 9 o'clock. San Diego is Landscaping 101 with Ted, and here in Poway at 9:30 for The Love of Hoyas with Tammy.
Okay. And our special guest today has been Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria. And your website is atkinsonplumeria.com.
Yeah, and it lists all the things that we do and we have. Social media, we're posting every day, pretty much a different variety every day, basically. So
it's a great resource. I send people to it all the time when they come in with plumeria questions.
Because you come into it, it's just this attack of all these colors, you know, and it's pretty beautiful. But yeah, we'll prune trees. We, you know, do consultations, your plumeria coach, you know, come in and I help people with insect problems or just identifying. A lot of people just want to know what the names are, that type of thing, but where to place them in certain places. I work with landscapers who call me and like, these people want plumerias. Mm-hmm. Where do I put it? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us, Mike. It's been a very interesting hour.
This was awesome.
Once again, Mike Atkinson from Atkinson Plumeria, atkinsonplumeria.com. Take a look. He's got a great website and a lot of information there as well. Thanks again. Mm-hmm. And you've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Aloha.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.